On today's Compassion Radio.
We have not had a typical missionary journey where, like, we got married and we both felt like God called us together and skippity-dippity off to Africa. But I don't regret it. It's been a long journey, but I think it's been all of those challenges hammered into cool character and opportunity. And I really get it when people have a hard time. But I also have hope of being on the other side of it, knowing that God is faithful to give us what we need when we ask.
Hi, friends, and welcome to part two from our latest Postcards from the Edge series, so to speak, as we check in on how missional people really live, how they get along, and how they flourish in helping build God's kingdom in this day and age, all around the world. In this case, a country deep in the African interior where precious few missionaries are even active. Hint, the adjustments and the work ain't easy. But the successful 21st century missionaries, well, they'll tell you straight out that the secret sauce of living with feet permanently planted in the world and eternity at the same time comes down to one thing. Joy. The kind of joy that makes everything an adventure. Even the tough stuff. The most successful of them exude an exuberance that absolutely expects God to show up. And they have the stories to prove it. Carly is the name of our guest, and she's been sharing what it's really like for entrepreneurial people like herself and her husband to take on big things and love where God drops you. Whatever the circumstances. We'll recap a little of that first and move on to the story of what it really took to get on God's wavelength in the first place and to step into a vibrant daily relationship with Him at the very ends of the earth. Funny enough, just learning how to live a little and enjoy each day has been yielding impressive results in their ministry and their lives. Thanks for joining us today.
Just be patient and keep your eyes on what is unseen, not what is seen, right? I think I go back to that verse a lot.
Yeah, well, from the spiritual perspective, absolutely. It seems to me that most of the younger nations, and I would say that your nation is young in many ways, because there's a number of decades since colonial rule, oversight, or it's the colonial influence of the countries around it. So it doesn't see itself, I think, as a mature country. But it seems like the younger countries that I've been to as I've traveled, they have this naive expectation that if we just do what the countries I admire are doing, it'll be okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then they don't see the fall coming because they don't realize that there's corruption that does go around the world in many places. And then their heroes fall, and they have less faith in the system.
Interesting.
And then they have people that rise up and say, well, I will fix this thing here because I'm the one, I'm the savior. And then people fall for that. So they go from one naivety to another. And then the cynicism grows on many levels, the poorest, the poor, to the richest of the rich.
Yeah, yeah.
So I pray every time I think about you and the country you're in that God will keep providing ways for that dignity of work and the, as we would say, what's made the American system actually successful was guaranteeing property rights and basic rule of law. And if not the practice, at least the promise of one system being fair to all.
Land laws. My husband studied land specifically here for his graduate studies, and land is the most contested. It's like 95% of court cases, especially in like an agrarian society, land is life. But there isn't that. There isn't confidence that this land, if I buy it, it's going to be mine. Because, you know, we know multiple people who bought land and then somebody else bought the same land and the person took both their money and bounced and now there's two deeds and who owns it? Like it happens all the time. And like due process, I mean, if you speak out, you disappear. So like, what is that? There's not justice.
So that's the big fears right there. Of course, America's right now, as you know, going through this sense of we need order and some saying, well, in order to have order, we have to get rid of due process, which is a total oxymoron to me.
Yes, it is. 100%.
So I'm praying we don't fall for a false savior mentality either.
Absolutely.
By systems or people that we assume are going to bring the order that we crave. So there is something about we, the people, saying this is who we are, and we're going to work together to be a more perfect union. And your ditch-digging metaphor and reality there in your country is, for me, based on the simple biblical knowledge of you got the square foot. This is where I'm assigning you to stand, and you choose to say yes, to step in, to be the one that's going to be the first to swing the pick. and you got your buddy with you, and between the two of you, you'll pace yourself. You'll find a way to have someone to help you through what you got to get through. You'll help them get through what they got to get through. And then that will multiply up the chain so that the country has that same ethic.
Yep.
And I do believe it's a spiritual principle. So I would think the way you're digging your wells seems to me to be the best way to build a nation.
Yep. Yeah. In fact, I was kind of working on a bit of a newsletter blog today, sort of workshopping that metaphor, because I think it's super powerful. You know the direction we're going. We know the direction we're laying pipe. We know the direction of the tank, and we got to pick. Mm-hmm. And the ground's really hard, but we're doing it together, and we might have to get rid of a lot of stones, but we know the direction we're going. But you can't fix your eyes on that direction 2 miles away. You'll get so discouraged. Yeah. So just like one thing at a time.
But there is something I think about digging holes. We do have to have a vision. Like, we need to know where the lines go and not just walk 3 feet and start wandering
off. And the hope
off.
Of water.
Yeah, the hope of water.
For a reason. It's not pointless. Like,
that's a great phrase. Okay, well, for the rest of the time we've got on this first interview, Carly, I would like to talk with you about how you got there. Some people just decide they're going to become a missionary and go save the world, and they have someplace in mind. They're going to go, in their mind, they're conquering evil by just showing up and doing the work, and I assume everyone will be grateful for what they do. And they become jaded when they realize people are not necessarily understanding your mission as being something necessarily and guaranteed to be good.
Mm.
It's a threat. And so they have to kind of readjust their own expectations of what it means to actually serve people. And I go back to the word and learn more about what it really means to grow in the faith that way. But you and your husband seem to be missional people, that you went for the education, you went for opportunity, you went for travel, you explored, and something drew you, and you started thinking that through. And God, I think through those passions, kind of pointed you to a place that not many people from your upbringing or your background or your country would bother to go to. And that, for me, is something that is more of a calling and something that is organic spiritually.
Sure.
So tell me about the story. I mean, how did you and your husband find your way to that particular block of 10 apartments and the coffee shop down the street and learning how to be an expat in an African country?
That's funny. Yeah, I'll give you the broad strokes because there's about 1 million God stories in there. But yeah, so my husband and I got married in 2010. We were just 20 years old, just babies, and zero conversation about living globally when we got married. I had, like, always loved the idea of travel. Grew up in a small town, loved my town, wanted to live there till I died. Grew up next to my grandparents, like, had no desire to leave ever. But one day after being married a year and a half, my husband came home and said, "I think God just told me we should live in Africa." And I was like, "No, he did not. He did not tell you that, because he did not tell me that. So no, we are not living in Africa. That's crazy." And I cried a lot. How could you even dare to think about this? You know, we just bought a house. We're settling in for our life. And I'm not doing that. So 6 months later, we moved overseas. We had a church that had a connection in the country that I'm living in. And that connection would come over and do fundraising projects. And our church had for years been supporting them in their various projects. And so the deal for me was like, well, listen, if this is from God, let's not pursue it. And if we get a random invitation to go live in Africa, then we'll consider it. Thinking, no one's just going to like randomly invite us to go live in Africa. Yeah, that's what happened though. This guy came, and he came every year, but he never did this. And he didn't know we were praying about this. And at the end of his visit, he said, "You know, I'm thinking, would you be interested in moving over there with us?" And I was so mad about
how
that.
Dare
but also,
you.
How could I say no? How could I say no?
If you spend half a year praying something and saying, "I want to hear God speak," but you're putting your hand over his mouth at the same time, he's going to have to find a way to actually answer your prayer.
I think it was like within 6 weeks that we prayed that and this happened. It was very fast.
Funny.
So I felt like I couldn't deny that. I was like, well, I don't want to go. I have no desire to do it. I grew up in the church. I've never had like a missionary calling. Like, I've always been missional. I think I think naturally an evangelist, but I just never could see myself living overseas. And so this felt very strange, but I couldn't deny this is what God had said. So with confidence in the Lord, off we went. And we moved to this country. Within 11 days of being in this country, we realized the organization that our church had been supporting basically didn't exist.
Uh-oh.
And we still to this day don't really know why the guy brought us over, because we were like, you would have surely noticed that, like, none of the things we fundraise for are real. Like, what is going on? And I really thank the Lord for that in respect, because I think we probably would have just kept fundraising for him and not known it. And we were foolish. I mean, we were young, and we should have come over here way before and checked it out, and we didn't. And even if we had, you know, I think you can come over and people can put on a show for you for a week. But
they,
like,
can.
This story is not unique. Almost everyone I know who lives here has had some version of this story. So anyway, within 11 days, we were like, yeah, we can't work with this guy. And here I am thinking, oh, this is great. This means I nearly sacrificed Isaac. God provided a ram. I get to go home. I've proven my faithfulness, but I get to go home now.
Let me out of the sketch.
But actually, God had other plans. So we ended up staying 2 years. We ended up partnering with another organization that we got connected to very quickly, another cool act of God. And we were fundraised missionaries at the time sent out by our church. There were three of us living on 10 grand a year, eating beans and rice every day and really struggling. Like, my husband immediately fell in love with this country, learned the language in 6 months, and is like, you'll bury me in this land. I love it. I'm never going back. And I was like, I don't want to live here. This is really hard and I'm not feeling it. I'm not a linguist and it wasn't for me. So that was hard.
We'll be back with more right after this. And if you don't mind me saying so now, I hope this short message will stick with you as well. For you are essential to the mission of Compassion Radio. We truly cannot do it without you. Compassion Radio has been committed to bringing you the truth about what God is really doing in the world and how He is bringing about the salvation, redemption, life, and growth of His kingdom wherever it is to be found. So much has changed and is changing in this world. At the same time, I'm discovering in a deeper way how absolutely consistent God is in times of trial. So I'll ask you, will you help? Just call today with your first gift and consider making it monthly. Call us 1-800-868-2478. That's 1-800-868-2478. Our mailing address is P.O. Box 77160, Corona, California, 92877. And our website is CompassionRadio.com. If you're on the move right now, you can also text COMPASSION to 53445 to make your gift immediately. God bless you. And now, back to our discussion.
And I was like, I don't want to live here. This is really hard and I'm not feeling it. I'm not a linguist and it wasn't for me. So that was hard. So we were here 2 years. And also we learned pretty quickly that being fundraised missionaries is just not for us. We have tons of friends who are fundraised missionaries and bless them, love them, support them. But that is not for us. I don't know if it's even should be for them. I mean, it's exhausting and they don't want to do it. It's just not our favorite. So we said, okay, after 2 years here, we said, let's go back to the US and let's get degrees because we were only 22 when we came here. And let's find jobs we can do remotely and then move back. I mean, that's what we decided on paper. I think that was my husband's, like, yes, this is what we're going to do. And for me, I was like, maybe once we get back to the US, he'll kind of forget about this whole thing and we can just stay there.
Love is a funny thing.
So we came back to the States. We did some degrees, and that brought us actually to the UK for some years because my husband turns out is super brilliant, and he got a some graduate degrees, and that popped us in and out of the country that we live in because his graduate work is focused on this country. So we kind of kept in and out, in and out, in and out, a year here at a time, and then back in the UK, and then another year here, and then back in the States, just kind of finishing degrees up. And then we permanently came back a couple years ago. And somewhere in there, about 7 years into the back and forthing of that, I really was just crying out to the Lord. I just needed a different heart. I'm like, God, I can't live here and just not feel anything. Like, this can't just be my husband's calling. This has to be mine too. Like, this is a very difficult country to live in. As much as I love this man, this has to be something we're both in it, or else we're just going to end up resenting each other. So I gave it one last final try, yeah, around 2020, 2019. And yeah, God just like transformed my heart. When we moved into a different neighborhood, we moved into an unreached Muslim community, where before we were living in an expat neighborhood. And that was just so different because, first of all, a lot of them spoke English, so I didn't have to learn another language. And also, it just missionally was so much more interesting to me. Like, I just loved it. And it just, I don't know, came alive. And now it really feels like both of our things. And that's been really special. So it's been a really long journey. We have not had a typical missionary journey where, like, we got married and we both felt like God called us together and skippity-dippity off to Africa. But I don't regret it. It's been a long journey, but I think it's been all of those challenges hammered into cool character and opportunity. And I really get it when people have a hard time. But I also have hope of being on the other side of it, knowing that God is faithful to give us what we need when we ask. So,
You're also figuring out what community means for you and what your identity is, not just in
for
Christ
sure.
theologically, but
Yeah,
who are you as a
absolutely.
person in this generation?
Yeah.
It seems to me your personality would bend towards entrepreneurialism and exploration anyway. You just seem to be that kind of person. You're an extrovert.
Certainly true of my husband, yeah.
And that will lend itself towards things that are surprising because you think you want safety. You're afraid of letting go of something that you think is valuable, namely your identity, your nationality, your friends. But it seems like the way you're explaining this is that when you finally let God take you completely out of the pocket, you were no longer an expat. You mm-hmm. now were fully exposed. You had no other mm-hmm. quote, safety nets emotionally or anything else.
Yeah.
You finally surrendered to the opportunity to become somebody that would be able to not just survive where you were, but to flourish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And it was different than I expected. You know, it's odd that we're living in a country and our predominant missional focus is on a demographic that isn't from this country either. I mean, we're living in an area that is almost entirely Indian and Pakistani, and there's not people from the country I live in living here. So it's weird. We sort of have a foot in this world. I mean, I joke sometimes that I am more of a missionary in India than I am in Africa.
Yeah.
But then I work for an NGO that has work with communities of the country I live in. Mm-hmm. So I get to sort of go out to those communities and be local in the culture. But then I'm also in this other world. It's expat, but it's Asian expat. And I'm weird to both of them. So, but yeah, you're right. I think when I finally got to that place, I was just like, okay, Lord, I'm giving this one more shot and I will give it my 100%, all open, no criticism. I will receive it. Please just give me the heart I need to have to be here. I share the story because it's really powerful to me. But like, I used to fly into this country and just the sinking feeling when I landed mm-hmm. here, like, oh, I mean, I love this country, but I just don't want to live here forever. This isn't where my heart is coming alive. And it just like would sink into me like a cold blanket. Mm. And then this particular year that we moved back, that didn't happen. And then I waited a couple weeks and it still didn't happen. And then I started like loving it. And I was like, I thought it was so weird. I'm like, this is such a strange experience because I've never felt eager to be here. And now I do. And it was miraculous. It wasn't just because nothing changed. As you said, like we moved out of sort of this expat community. We started eating different food and we started having different experiences. And I think the biggest change is we started having fun here. Mm. And I know that sounds weird, but I think a lot of the times missionaries move to places and they're like, it's my cross to bear. Mm. We just can't smile or have fun at all. Yep. Just eat your beans and live in a hut. And maybe that's for some people. When we first moved here, I think that's kind of what we thought we had to do. We had to wear like missionary clothing. Mm. Like, don't go out and have a beer, God forbid. And, you know, whatever. Now we're like, since we weren't fundraised anymore, we could do whatever we wanted as far as, you know, we weren't limited. We had our own income. We didn't have to put, like, we went and had a beer on some invoice we were turning in. Yeah. And
the accountability accounting, yeah.
Yes, and we had accountability for the things that matter, like, mm-hmm. for sure, within the focus of our mission and how we're spending our money, for sure. But it wasn't like this nitpicky, like, what if someone sees me having fun and judges me? Because that happened. Like, mm-hmm. when we first were here, remember I posted a picture on Facebook of my husband and I on a date on the beach. That was it. Just us on the beach on a date on a Saturday night. And someone said, wow, it looks like you're really working hard at being a missionary over there. Is this what I'm paying you to do? And I was like,
not anymore. So, bye-bye.
But now literally we're like, let's go to the beach. Let's go hike to those waterfalls. We heard about this new cool restaurant. Let's go check it out. Like the sauna's a dollar here. Like, let's go to the sauna and get massages. Like, there's so much cool stuff in this country. Let's go listen to the local music. That's so fun. So I think we just started enjoying it. And you know, what's shocking is that local people can tell if you hate their country, and you're a lot less effective if you hate their country. But when you say things like, oh, what did you do today? Oh, you guys have the coolest hike. We went and saw your mountains. They're amazing. And they're like, aren't they so beautiful? We know. And you can bond over this like enjoyment of their place. And I think we used to be like this, but I see these missionaries that are just like, you went hiking? Well, I shared the gospel on the street corner till 3 a.m. yesterday. And it's like, you know, all the power to you. Go after it.
I dug 3 miles of trench by myself.
Yeah. Exactly. And I'm like, who are we trying to impress here? Like,
exactly.
I think incarnational ministry, it can look different in a lot of ways, but people are proud of the country they live in, even though it's broken. And it's a blessing to be able to enjoy what it has to offer people.
I've heard it described a few times that when it comes to third culture missionary families moving into a culture, And like you say, you're third culture to third culture right now. You are kind of internationals with internationals, as much as you are making friends with indigenous peoples from the country you're in.
Yeah.
So it's a different strata. It is traveling between all these things, or you're being an international traveler even where you are.
Mm-hmm.
But it does seem like when you get sent, for those who are bitter about what they've had to go through or what's been expected of them, like they've had to check their desires and their personality, their life at the door in order to become a missionary.
Yeah. Yeah. That
it's like their greatest joy is misery.
Yes. And it becomes like a badge of honor. Like, look at how much I'm suffering. And that's given me like authority because I'm suffering this much. It's weird.
And then locals are saying, well, I'm sorry, I'm so much a burden to you.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. How is that effective? I had a 19-year-old gal that I was discipling, and she came out here for a visit, and she said, what's your number one advice to me? Because she wants to be a missionary. And I said, my number one advice is go back to America and get a degree that you can use here or something you can do remote, and then have a vision, have a mission and purpose, but like find a way to work your tent making into that. Because when you have to fundraise every dollar of your life, and then you're living on these like shoestring budgets, and you're so stressed out about that, it's really hard to be generous with your money because it's not really your money. And it's exhausting. If you live in a country that allows you to work, find a way to get a job, even meeting people missionally. Do you know how weird it is to meet someone and be like, oh, why are you in my country? And be like, oh, I'm a missionary. Immediately walls go up. I mean, like, I had to stop calling myself a missionary in the UK because when I said that, people would stop speaking to me. They're like, oh, that means you're a racist bigot. We don't want to be friends with you. So I think that there's something to just saying, like, if you can get a job and meet people naturally, like you would in America. Like, I've spent my whole life sharing the gospel with my coworkers at various restaurant jobs and cafe jobs. It was the most fruitful mission field I ever had. Just get a job and just start hanging out with your coworkers. Get to know your customers. Like, this is how you become a part of a community. Very hard to become a part of a community when you're here as a missionary doing missionary things. It just puts you in a weird box. And I think you don't meet people organically. So it's changed our whole world to not be fundraise missionaries. And I would never go back.
Yeah, I would say the one qualification I put to that is for those who are called to be raising support because of the different paradigm. Sometimes. If God calls you into that, it's going to be something God does bless. And even Sandy and I are kind of in that transition ourselves to be more responsible and dependent upon certain kinds of missionary support than we've ever had in our lives. So it's going to be an interesting transition for us on that front as well, because we've always been employed people in all the things we've done with ministry work. But it can go both ways. The important thing I think you've identified here is that there is a false dichotomy between being missional and following God's calling in that and having to feel like you need to snap into somebody else's paradigm for how that's done, what it means, what it's going to cost you, and who you're responsible to and who gets to judge you. When all that stuff compounds, it becomes, like you say, that weight, that wet blanket you mentioned sinking into the mountains of your country that you're in. It is a spiritual weight more than anything else, because I do believe God's going to provide in a way that's going to bring out the very best in us.
For sure. For sure. Yeah. And I don't mean to say that God's not providing. I mean, I look at my missionary friends and they probably have more faith than I do because they do have to live like penny to penny of can they afford their kids' school fees, you know, and God provides for them. I see miracles, God providing funding for them. And I'm so thankful for that for them. Yeah. I'm not saying God is against that or anything. I just think sometimes it causes unnecessary stress when there's a better way, potentially.
Yeah, I think you're finding God's design for you. And there are probably a lot of people that are just like you, that are just entrepreneurial and just as seeking of joy and opportunity to live life to its fullest that never knew that someone like you existed. And therefore, they might consider the possibility of going themselves, because this isn't the only way to do it, the way I think missionaries have to act.
Yeah, for sure.
It could be a joyful, fulfilling, bountiful life. It can be. Some people, I think, would jump at the chance to do that if they knew that it was possible to be joyful in doing it.
Yeah. I do think it's rare. I mean, the country I'm in doesn't have a ton of Western expats in it. There's not a lot here. But I have never met another person or couple doing what we're doing. You're either here with a big charity or government program, like, you know, UN or WFP or whatever. You're here under some kind of humanitarian umbrella, or you're here as a missionary. I've yet to meet anyone doing remote work for an American company or a Western company while funding yourself that way. I've never seen anyone else do it. I know that it's probably not occurred to many people, but also I do think those jobs sometimes can be hard to find for a number of reasons. So yeah. I'm thankful. I realize that's not easy to just go out and get for everybody, but God's met our need in that way, which is cool.
And it seems like he's met your need, not just in sustenance and make sure you have enough shekels in your pocket to go buy dinner, but he's peppering your life with people that are becoming friends. Mm-hmm. And that you have people that you're depending upon and having a real community with people that are actually inviting you into their community.
Yeah, so. That's true.
On our next program, we'll wrap up this lively conversation with Carly, our guest who's a missionary living in the very heart of Africa. We hope you'll tune in then. And if you missed any of this program or any of the three episodes in this series, just catch our podcast on our website, CompassionRadio.com. Our toll-free number is 1-800-868-2478. Our mailing address is P.O. Box 77160, Corona, California, 92877. And our website is CompassionRadio.com. We'll see you tomorrow.